So often in January time, we talk a little about the vision of the church, and we talk about what we sense God has been saying to us. We don't dismiss, and we're not dismissing what God has been saying to us before. We're still passionate about missional discipleship and being a people who are on mission both here in the city, becoming a hub in the city for the kingdom to break out, particularly in places where there's a lot of vulnerability in our world. We want to be prepared for mission on our front lines, disciples. We're the church scattered much more than we're the church gathered. We spend most of our life as the Church of Jesus Christ separate from each other in all kinds of different communities. And as Fred was praying earlier on, whether you're in Crieff or Comrie or Ochterarder or Scone or Lunkerty or wherever you're from, wherever you work, we're the people of God there as well. And so how do we equip one another to be followers of Jesus, men and women of faith in those places? So we don't forget, that's what we're all about. But this last year, we've sensed that God has been doing some new things among us in the area of worship and prayer, young adults and children and youth. And so we're saying, how do we respond? And one of the ways that we are doing that is with this new staff position. And just because we need to invest more. And I want to say right straight away, we do not provide staff positions to give the church a rest. We put staff positions in place to mobilize the church. Now, it's really important that you realize this, because that's what we're all about at Trinity. This is not about creating a staff who'll do ministry and the work. It's about having a staff that help the whole people of God in the ministry of God in the church and the world, and in the mission of God all around us. And we are participants in this together. Now, back in November last year, I was over in Ireland. I make trips over to Ireland every so often, have some responsibility for one of our Nazarene churches, which is in just south of Dublin. And while we were there, we were hosting leaders, national leaders from across the countries in Northern Europe where we have Nazarene churches. And as part of those national leaders, we invited for the first time the youth leaders, national youth leaders in the Church of the Nazarene across Northern Europe. And we wanted just to hear from them, to hear what was going on, to hear what they were passionate about, to hear what they were struggling with, to hear what they were longing for. And actually, it was a very revealing conversation that we had with them and listening to what they had to say. And I think in some ways, we were all surprised by what stood out, what seemed to be the priority of their conversation. So we thought that probably some of the things that they would come and talk to us about were things like identity and sexuality and opportunity, if only you'd let young people do something. And actually, although these surfaced, they surfaced in really small ways. Do you know what they spoke about? Unity. That's what they spoke about. They're longing to see unity across the generations. A shift from, we'll let the young people get on with doing their thing. Isn't it great we've got young people, let them do their thing, to an intergenerational church. Now, this is significant in the Church of the Nazarene because for years we've talked about ourselves as this intergenerational church. But in practice, what that looks like is we say, isn't it great when we've got young people, I hope they do really well. Rather than, in fact, there being this interconnectedness where they know us and we know them and somehow they're involved in what we're doing and we're involved in what they're doing and we're aware and they're aware and there's relationship and there's this wonderful intergenerational church. They spoke of a longing for family, the family of God across the generations. I found that really challenging as someone who's always felt as if I was really focused on releasing young people and young adults. But as I looked back, I began to think, that's what I've done is I've said, great, we've got some young people. Let's find some young adults and let them get on with it. But what would it mean if we all took responsibility for one another in many ways, and in the generations either ahead of us or behind us? Now, here's the blessing of our reality at Trinity. And not everyone has this, but we have people from every generation, every decade. We have a bundle of people. We have people in every decade. Kids everywhere, young people finding their way in faith, young adults reaching out, families encouraging one another, middle-agers, it's me, senior adults, serving, leading. We have people from across the generations. But are we intergenerational or just a church with generations? So we acknowledge the blessing, but then we challenge ourselves again. But what does it mean for us to be really intergenerational, involved and aware of one another? And how do those who are older really bless those who are younger? And then those who are younger, how do they bless those who are older? You get what I mean. Well, we're going to look at a passage of Scripture that might at first seem unusual to choose on a subject like this, but I want us to go to John chapter 6, which is the story of Jesus feeding the 5,000. And I want to set it within this context of being the family of God, with each generation sharing in the ministry and the unity of the church, working together for and with each other, investing, partnering in what God is doing. And we're really saying to you as leaders, we are saying to the church, God is doing something in this generation of younger people, children, young people, young adults. And so we want to say, what does it look like then for us to bless, to invest and partner in what we see God doing? So let's go to John chapter 6. The words will be on the screen. And let's begin with the first four verses. Sometime after this, Jesus crossed to the far shore of the Sea of Galilee, that is the Sea of Tiberias. And a great crowd of people followed him because they saw the signs he had performed by healing the sick. Then Jesus went up on a mountainside and sat down with his disciples. The Jewish Passover festival was near. So let's just pause there. There's more in there than you would think. There's a lot going on in just these four verses. First of all, Jesus has crossed to the far side, the far shore of the Sea of Galilee. So he's miles away from Jerusalem, the center of Israel's culture, religion, the temple. He's moved away from that, and he's now heading into what is, in effect, the wilderness. He's heading away from the center of Jewish religious life, and he now finds himself in the wilderness, crossing over the Sea of Galilee into an area that was largely just grass and hills and wilderness. It's also the Passover. And the Passover is the celebration of as the Jewish people celebrate their liberation from Egypt as slaves. When they were liberated from Egypt, and then they were brought out into what? Through a sea and into the wilderness. So you see the parables. John is not just writing this in. There's something that he's saying here. In the same way that the people of God were rescued out of their slavery in Egypt and had to navigate a sea and then were in the wilderness, so now Jesus gathers his disciples, crosses over a sea and goes into what feels like wilderness. And in that wilderness, as we're about to see, he will feed this crowd of people in a miraculous way. And again, if we go back to this Old Testament story of the Exodus, what happens when the people of God come through the Red Sea and into the wilderness? God feeds them supernaturally with manna, bread from heaven. And so John mentions these details for a purpose, and the purpose is this. He's leading his readers to understand who this Jesus is. It's not just another teacher. It's not just another rabbi. It's not just another prophet. The same God who brought salvation back then from Egypt through the Red Sea into the wilderness where he fed his people is now present with you in Jesus, the Son of God, who is still bringing liberation, leading people and providing for them in supernatural ways. And actually, we're not going to get to this bit in the story, but initially, the people kind of get it, but there's more to learn. They're on a journey. Isn't that what we're doing as the church? We're helping one another in this journey of learning Jesus, drawing closer to him, learning more about him, that he is who he says he is, not just some teacher or rabbi who gives us some good things to think about. But in this journey called the Church of Jesus Christ, we walk with each other to learn more of Jesus. That he is the same one that brought salvation and leads us even through the wilderness, providing supernaturally for us, feeding us in whatever ways we need. And for you this morning, perhaps even just as a kind of side note, if there are things that you feel like you're a wilderness person just now, it feels kind of dry around you, we encourage you, seek God. He'll give you what you need. He'll give you what you need. So the crowd and the families and the disciples, everyone who's there, they kind of get who Jesus is, but together they're going to learn who Jesus is. That's what we do. That's what we do with our children, our young people, together. Well, let's go on. Verse 5. When Jesus looked up and saw a great crowd coming towards him, he said to Philip, "Where shall we buy bread for these people to eat?" He asked this only to test him, for he already had in mind what he was going to do. So what's happening here? First of all, there's an acknowledging of the crowd. An acknowledging of the crowd. People are beginning to arrive. Families, whole families are arriving to see this Jesus. And Jesus looks up and he acknowledges the crowd. Well, in some ways, that's what we're doing as church leaders. We're acknowledging the crowd, not just that we have, but the crowd beyond us. We're saying we have got a church that is across the generations in a place in Perth and the city region. We're acknowledging the crowd around us. And we're acknowledging what is going on, what God is doing. This specific part of our vision and calling, responding to what God has given us, blessed us with children and young people. And so what has happened is the board and myself and the youth leaders and some of the children's leaders, we've all got together and we said, what can we do about this? And if we were to have, if we were to bring somebody into post, into position, what would that look like? We tried to do that together across the generations. Why? Because we were acknowledging what God is doing in the crowd. And then when you acknowledge what God is doing in the crowd, you've got to respond to it and do something. And so as part of that envisioning process, recognizing the life and blessing within our family, we then had to say, how will we feed them? How will we respond to what God has given us? What will we do for those who he's brought into our care and responsibility? And then more than that, not just who he's brought now, but the more of those who are not yet here, the generation of children and young people out there. What do we say in response to that crowd? And just to let you know, when you get that job description in your email inbox, it'll talk about the fact that we are focused not just in children and youth here, but children and youth out there. The more who are not yet here. And Jesus, in some ways, is he looks up and he sees the crowd and he acknowledges the crowd and he acknowledges the need, and then he turns to Philip and says, What do you think we could do here in terms of sorting out some food for these people? And Philip's looking around. And as we go on to say it, there are 5,000, and the suggestion is it's 5,000 men. Terribly sexist in those days, you know, count the men. But clearly there were families, because one of the children comes out as the top class student in all of this. So who knows how many thousands of people were gathering there. And Jesus acknowledges the crowd and then says to the disciples, his followers, hey, let's feed this lot. And Philip is like, "How? What on earth do we do here?" So let's go on. Verse 7. Philip answered him, "It would take more than half a year's wages to buy enough bread for each one to have even a bite." And then another of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, spoke up. "Here is a boy with 5 small barley loaves and 2 small fish. But how far will they go among so many?" I mean, it's reasonable questions, don't you think? Thousands of people, children and young people and parents, families, grandparents, who knows who all was coming? Jesus says, "Let's feed them." And Philip and Andrew are like, how do we do this? How do we even manage this? And initially there's bewilderment at Jesus' question. The disciples are kind of scrambling for a solution that they can come up with to what looks like an impossible and maybe even an unreasonable request. Now, here's what N.T. Wright says on it. Philip doesn't know what to do. Andrew doesn't know either, but he brings the boy and his bread and fish to Jesus' attention. Then he says this, "So often we ourselves have no idea what to do, but the starting point is always to bring what is there to the attention of Jesus." You can never tell what Jesus is going to do with it, though part of the Christian faith is the expectation that he'll do something we hadn't thought of, something new and creative. What is N.T. Wright saying? He's saying that even when we don't really know what to do, what have we got? Well, bring that to Jesus and watch what he will do. And really, that's at the heart of the story of the feeding. It's the bringing of something very little that seems to have been brought by a little boy, not by the adult saying, "Oh, we'll give our food down and see if we can make a bit. We'll let it stretch a bit," you know. It was a little boy who seems to somehow, whether he offered it or whether he was coerced, we don't know, but somehow this little boy becomes the one who offers the little he had and brought it to the attention of Jesus. And that's what we're doing in this season of casting vision, reminding you of what we think God is saying to us. And saying, what have we got? Let's bring it. Give it to the attention of Jesus. And let's participate in the miracle that's about to happen. For you personally, what have you got? It's what you've got. You can't bring what you've not got, so just bring what you've got to Jesus. And so there's a faith factor that is taking place in this story. And an almost impossible, even unreasonable task. How on earth can we do it? Well, we bring what we have and we offer it to Jesus. And then we see what Jesus will do with whatever it is we bring. And that he tends to do something new, something we hadn't thought of. And again, I think that's what we're doing as we come to you this morning as a leadership, as I come as your pastor and say, we're doing a bit of a faith factor here. We think this is what God is saying to us, to make an investment that will be for the good of all, but will give focus to our children and young people. But that we're stepping into this, not with everything we need, but with a large amount of faith. And we're inviting you into this faith step also. So that's the little boy. And it's amazing what you can learn from those who are younger, whose faith seems so simple and straightforward. But let's go on. Verse 10. So the boy has come with his two fish and five loaves, and Jesus said, "Have the people sit down." There was plenty of grass in that place, and they sat down. About 5,000 men were there. Jesus then took the loaves, gave thanks, and distributed to those who were seated as much as they wanted. And he did the same with the fish. So the kind of spotlight has been for these last few moments on the little boy and Philip and Andrew and the disciples. Now the spotlight is back on Jesus. Jesus enters again. Something has been brought to Jesus' attention. Jesus will now do his bit, the bit that only he can do. But the disciples have still got their bit to do. It is in their serving, their participation in what Jesus is doing, that the miracle seems to be activated and multiplied. Now, you don't get the sense of it so much in John's episode, but if you go to Matthew and Mark, then it's very deliberate that Jesus gives to the disciples, and then the disciples begin to pass to the people, and the people pass it around. Everybody's involved in somehow in participating in this miracle and provision of God. I think there's something beautiful about that. That everybody got to participate in the miracle as well as be beneficiaries of the miracle. And so out of this one little boy's lunch, everyone gets to participate in this miracle. In Luke's version of these events, Jesus even begins to organize the crowd into 50s. So in some way, there's organization for the miracle. Isn't that interesting? Jesus, knowing what was coming, organized this crowd into smaller groups so that they could serve each other. They were all ended up being participants of the miracle and its provision. And they would all participate in faith. You know, it doesn't say anything about, you know, Jesus broke the bread and suddenly, you know, all these baskets appeared. But it seemed to be that as they broke it and started giving it out and passing it along, it just seemed that more and more came. We are all called to be involved in miraculous provision across the generations as we participate in what we believe God is doing. So let me bring us back to our announcement this morning about children and youth and about this new staff member. We're stepping in this direction in faith. We don't have what we need to make it happen, but we've brought it to Jesus, who invites us all to participate in the miracle of provision for the family of God. That you would be involved in this faith step with us, bringing to Jesus what you have in all of this, so that we're all participants and beneficiaries in it. So how can we do that in relation to this specific area of children and youth in this new position? Well, I want to invite you to see this and to see this passage as a call to partnership and investing. There was a faith step that had to be taken, a partnering together. And then I want to press it a little more further into that and say, this also requires an investing in your part and mine. So let me read, come out of John 6 and go to another passage in Scripture that really is a beautiful representation of the church. And it's in Paul's letter to the Romans, chapter 12. And Paul begins to talk to the church in Rome, or to write to them, about what the church should look like as a family, or in Paul's language, as the body of Christ. So we're going to start at verse 3, Romans chapter 12. For by the grace given me, I say to every one of you, do not think of yourself more highly than you ought, but rather think of yourself with sober judgment in accordance with the faith God has distributed to each of you. For just as each of us has one body with many members, and these members do not all have the same function, so in Christ we, though many, form one body, and each member belongs to all the others. We have different gifts according to the grace given to each of us. If your gift is prophesying, then prophesy in accordance with your faith. If it is serving, then serve. If it is teaching, then teach. If it is to encourage, then give encouragement. If it is giving, then give generously. If it is to lead, do it diligently. If it is to show mercy, do it cheerfully. And so there's this picture of the family of God or the body of Christ with each one having their part to play. There's something that each of us do. There may be some things that all of us can do. But then there are other things that, according to our gifting or our passion or our calling, that God might specifically ask us to do. And so we bring what we have, like the little boy, and we draw it to Jesus' attention. Lord, I'm going to give this. Lord, I can help with this. And somehow when we do that as a people of God, as a family of God, what happens is we start to serve one another. And then we learn, having served one another, to serve the world beyond us, to serve and bless there. And so each of us has our part to play. We're partners in this across the generations. We're investing in the other generations. You know, when you help or lead on a Sunday morning with Sunday school, you're investing. If you're a school teacher, I had the joy of being in Jack's class this week. Jack's an RMPS teacher, is that correct? Last time I called him an RE teacher, and he shamed me. You know, if wherever you work, so Jack and Paula are in the Perth High section of the congregation. The teachers from Perth High sit here. But, you know, where you serve, the way God has gifted you, what he's called you in for this season, or whatever it is, wherever you are, it's not just what you do here, it's what you do out there as well. What have you got in your hands? Bring it to the attention of Jesus. Jesus, I want to give. And some of that will be here in the gathered community, and some of it will be wherever you are. Invest and partner as the body of Christ, the family of God. And I'm going to suggest a few ways that you can do that, specifically in relation to the youth and young people and this new role that we will be recruiting for. We reckon that this new role will probably, the faith decision is about £35,000. And what we said is let's raise this as a congregation. So the first one is give. One of my colleagues who is not from Scotland, comes from another pastor who comes from Brazil. Him and I were having this conversation recently. So he's from Brazil. And he said, what is wrong with the church in Scotland that they think you shouldn't talk about money? At which point I became very uncomfortable. And he said, why is it the Bible talks about money? Why don't the church ever talk about money? Well, with a deep breath, I'm preparing to talk about money. But giving, what we give financially, is an act of worship. That's how the Bible talks of it. Giving is not about, what can I see if I have left and I might give something to the church and I hope they can use it. It is an act of worship. And it's asking God, Lord, in my finances, what can I give? And what can I give that may even be sacrificial giving? What can I give to your work, to you? and to see it as an act of worship and an act of trust and an act of faith, which is what we're calling one another to this morning. To sacrificial, generous giving. So if we go back into the different gifts that were in Paul's letter to the Romans, if it's prophesying, then prophesy. If it's serving, then serve. If it's teaching, then teach. If it's to encourage, then give encouragement. If it's giving, then give generously. About 85%, just below 85% of our giving is given by 35% of our worshiping community. So I just share that with you. 85% of our giving is given by 35% of the congregation. So the reason I say that is because I know that there's space to step into as a church community in this area. And to encourage you to think about giving as an act of worship and to review, what am I giving? What am I giving financially? Is there more that could be given? When was the last time you reviewed your giving? Now we'll come to the other things that Paul mentions in his passage. So, you know, if giving is a touchy subject for you, for whatever reason, and understand, there's more to come. But we can't avoid this matter. And so we're inviting you to take a step of faith with us and to ask yourself the question, is what I give financially, what kind of expression of worship is that to God? And if you're a taxpayer, then we encourage you to gift aid what you're giving, because the government will give us tax back from the tax that you've given, about 25%, that we then get the benefit of. So everything is uplifted. And so we will send to you at some point gift aid forms that you can fill in return. But these are practical matters as we step in faith as a church into what we're doing. We're asking you to invest. The boy gave what he had. And it was an investment that would result in a miracle in this mission of Jesus. So that's the first, give. The second is serve. Serve. You know, if you can lead, lead. If you can teach, teach. If you can encourage, encourage. The involvement of our lives and the lives of those in the generations that come after us. I'm so thankful. I think the last count, there was something like 72 or 75 volunteers who helped with what we do in a Sunday morning with the kids. And then you add the youth leaders into that as well. We're probably heading towards 100 people who help with that. But we can always use more. And we can always use more often as well. And so there are ways in which you could lead or help or teach or encourage. Not all of this is done in the organization of the church, but just in the interconnections with our young people. And being aware of them. Encouraging them when we talk to them. Actually going to talk to them. Telling them that we're thankful to God they're here. Living it by example. How we live influences the next generation. How do we connect with them? Do you know them? Do you know their names? Have you introduced yourself to them and said, oh, what's your name so I can pray for you? That connection, the looking out for one another, the serving, the encouraging. I know that our young people often are looking for people to host them. So they often want to, you know, rather than just being in next door, they'll say, maybe we can go to someone's house and they'll host us. I mean, could that be you? You know, could you speak to the youth leaders and say, hey, we'd be happy to have the young people around sometime, make some food for them. It's another investment into their lives. A connecting intergenerationally. So yes, the responsibility of giving, but also the responsibility of serving that really connects us. And then the third one, of course, is praying. When we go through these Romans 12, we didn't quite get onto it because further on, it talks about just praying. Be faithful in prayer. So all the ways we can give or serve or teach or lead, and to do it diligently and generously and sacrificially. As Paul goes on, he says, and pray. Be faithful in prayer. And so next week, in some ways it's the way it's worked out, which is great, but we thought, let's take this focus on prayer that we are having just now, and let's combine it in with a family service. And let's have our children and young people involved in the call to prayer and in the praying. And let's all be together and pray for each other. Pray for our children, our young people. Have them pray for the rest of the congregation. Find out together what ways we can pray. Give, serve, pray. What can you bring? What can you bring? And age is no limit. We are an intergenerational church, from the youngest to the oldest. And I want to just acknowledge the older generation. When I met with the field leaders, the youth leaders, the national leaders, they were talking about this intergeneration. It wasn't just young adult leaders that they wanted. It was people who were older, who could come and encourage them or work alongside them or help them. And I just want to recognize the older generation. I'll leave you to decide whether this is you or not. But I want you to recognize how the older generation serve. They're incredible. You watch them. You probably only see them, maybe some of them anyway, at tea time at Trinity when we're setting up for the evening, and there they are, 15, 20 of them, putting out knives and forks. And then I see them during the week when they're down and round and about and what they're doing, how they serve. They'll probably hate me for saying this, but you know, Mary and Albert sent me a little message to say, hey, can we promote what SU at some point? Because they're involved in SU in schools. I mean, they must be at least 60, Mary and Albert, I don't know. and plus a few. You know? Age is no limit. Honestly, and we're out in the east end of Glasgow, in the church that I was at before here. This is not an understatement. We would not have been able to do what we did in the community had it not been for the generation of early retirement and retirement people. They made it happen. And so, on one hand, I want to be an encouragement to those of you who are in that older generation and thank God for you. And then I want to press a little bit further and say, lead the way. Lead the way. You probably have the time. You may have the resources. You still have the gifting. God is still calling you for something. But I want to acknowledge what you already do with thankfulness before God. Psalm 92 says this, the righteous will flourish like a palm tree. They will grow like a cedar of Lebanon. Planted in the house of the Lord, they will flourish in the courts of our God. They will still bear fruit in old age. They will stay fresh and green, proclaiming the Lord is upright. He is my rock, and there is no wickedness in him. That's for all of you still bearing fruit in old age. And then parents and families. We're talking about your children and young people, particularly your grandchildren, whoever it is you're looking after. And there's a partnership very specifically for you as well to invest with your children and young people to get them there. Now, I know that's not easy all the time. To make it a priority to get them there. We're investing. Invest with us. Partner with us. However you can, to get them there. Presence is important, to make it a priority. And then also to make it a priority in your own lives, in your home, to to teach your kids the ways of the Lord. Not just to say, oh, that's what the youth group do, or that's what Sunday school is for, but for you yourself to be involved, as I'm sure you are, in the journey of discipleship for your children and young people. And so we're saying to families, for you, that this is an investment for your family as well. Partner with us, with your children and young people, making our life here a priority. And also for you, that give, serve, pray. I love these verses from Deuteronomy 6 about the ways in which God calls us to disciple in our homes. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be on your hearts. Then it says, impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates. What is that saying? It's saying the home is the base of learning the love of God and the love of neighbor. Do it when you're sitting down. Do it when you're walking them to the park. Do it when you're in the park. Do things in your house. Put stuff up that reminds us and reminds them of the love of God, of your love for him. Discipleship in the home. And so in all this participation comes the miracle plus. And so let's finish just with the last bit of the story. Verse 12, when they had all had enough to eat, he said to his disciples, gather the pieces that are left over. Let nothing be wasted. So they gathered them and filled 12 baskets with the pieces of the 5 barley loaves left over by those who had eaten. From 5 loaves and 2 fish to a load of leftovers, that whatever Jesus had in mind wasn't going to be wasted. What a miracle. A miracle plus, which they all participated in. Wouldn't it be amazing if in this challenge to you, wouldn't it be amazing if we gave more than we needed and were able to give some of it away to bless others? Wouldn't it be amazing that if we drew in more financially than what was needed, we could bless others who are working in these areas? Would it be amazing if we had so many people willing to serve and lead that we had to say, well, let's send them out in other places? Wouldn't it be amazing if we had a miracle plus that allowed us to do much more than we ever had? Why? Because we brought them to Jesus. And he does things that we don't expect. New things. Things beyond what we had imagined.